This is Business Rockstars. I'm Brittany Lehman, and my guest today is Chad Dime, co-founder of Diff Eyewear. Chad, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Brittany. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So for those who are not familiar with you and Diff Eyewear, give us some background on you as an entrepreneur and kind of what led you to start your company.
For sure. You know, me as an individual, my entrepreneurial background kind of started with family. So my dad has been an importer of eyewear for 40 years. He just retired at the age of 75 in December. So growing up, you know, I was raised by a father and someone that just really believed in entrepreneurship, someone that really believed that working for yourself would ultimately kind of ring, I guess, more true for our family. It's just who we were as individuals. That's what he always beat into my head, I guess, as a kid. And for a while, it was more about me getting ready to come work with the family and getting ready to come work with my dad, who had worked really hard to build something. And in college, I sort of noticed that I had my own bit of entrepreneurial spirit. I found myself, you know, I was involved in teams and things like that. And I found myself gravitating towards really being a leader and really loving to lead teams of people. And I think that's where I really got a taste of, okay, if it's not going to be something I do with the family, you know, it's definitely going to be something that I pursue on my own one day. And in working with my family and getting through all the couple years after college, that's when I realized that, yeah, I wanted to work for myself. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I was an entrepreneur.
Amazing. Yeah. So for those who have never heard of Diff before, tell us what your company is and what you guys do.
Absolutely. So Diff is a charitable designer eyewear company. Going back to 2014 when we founded the business, the boys and I believed that we were going to create a fair market value for designer eyewear while giving back. That was the mission for Diff
from day one. And what was the first step, if you remember, that you took when you guys were really serious about, okay, we're actually going to start this company?
The first step was just making sure that we had, you know, a good plan. Everyone talks about a business plan and stuff like that, but it's more about working the plan. But you got to know what your attack is going to be. And for us at the time in 2014, we realized that the next kind of evolution, I think, for retail and for business and stuff was, for us, really online. That was our biggest realization, was that at that year, 2014, based on everything we had been doing as a team, I have two business partners, we realized that the first step was going to be attacking online and making sure that we could become a direct-to-consumer business first. We kind of felt that everything else with Diff and what we were going to do with it would come second or after that, and it did.
And was it hard to break into that space, or was it just kind of a natural ebb and flow?
Super hard. The boys and I got our start, and I would say Diff was really born out of the music festival industry. It's actually a really interesting story. But the boys and I were going to like 30, 40 music festivals a summer selling sunglasses and other types of eyewear, and it was amazing. And we had the idea of Diff was born there, really. But the challenge of getting into online wasn't just like, how are we going to sell online? We had all these other things going. And it was about taking what was important and all the other distractions and putting those to the side and focusing on what was important for us was building an online business. And so super challenging. But we had a plan for it. And I'd say that the influencer program and looking at what was happening with Instagram and stuff like that, that was kind of where we were like, okay, there's our in.
Yeah. And how did you guys kind of break into that market? Was it through festivals and just going to things where Instagram influencers were at? And do you think it really kind of helped Diff kind of break into this market?
It was everything. We left the festivals alone pretty abruptly. We were doing really well there for a while. Like I said, before Diff was born. And when we got out, we were looking for these other avenues. And like I said, it was everything. Influencer marketing for us, going back to when we started this, was something that my business partner, I wouldn't really take a lot of the credit for this. My business partner, Zach, was the one that was not just identifying this as an opportunity, because we all knew that influencer marketing and that Instagram was going to be an opportunity for marketing. He was the one that was saying, we're going to get the Jenners to wear our glasses. And I was kind of like, okay, well, how do you anticipate we do that?
Right.
And he just started at the bottom. We all did. You know, we wrote some emails together. We, at the time, back then, you could find links to bios and stuff, or links to emails in people's bios and things like that. And So a lot of the things that we were going after were people we were going after were just through email. We were reaching out to them via email that they had put in their bio. But if I was writing 10 emails a day, Zach was writing 100.
Wow.
You know, and if I ever got to the point where I wrote 100, he was writing 1,000. I mean, the guy just was like, here's my plan for Diff.
Right.
And we all kind of fell into our niche. You know, Chad Jernigan, my other business partner, was more focusing on driving business to the site, or once the eyes got to the site, how do we convert those eyes? And me, myself, I've always had a wholesale background. Mm-hmm. So how do we get glasses in the store? And then there's the charity. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where I really fell into something that I'm super passionate about and working with the charity. But, you know, back to Zach, that was just what he decided at the time was going to be really important for the brand. And we all agreed. Mm-hmm. And he just was head down.
I love that.
And that's how he got our glasses to be on the Jenners, for real.
That's amazing.
That's crazy.
Okay, so the name of your company is Diff Charitable Eyewear. Let's talk about the charity component to it.
For sure. Yeah, Diff Charitable Eyewear, we decided to throw charitable eyewear in there because we wanted it to be at the forefront of everything that we do. Mm-hmm. From day one, we always talked about how we would have a buy a pair, give a pair mm-hmm. as part of our business. I was an ambassador for Toms going back to my college days. So I was super privy to the fact that Toms was doing something really good and it was working for them. Mm-hmm. You know, people were really latching on to what their messaging was and supporting it. So from day one, we have donated a pair of reading glasses to someone in need for every pair of sunglasses that we sold. Through the progression of that, you know, going back to 2014, it was super manageable. I would connect with different partners around the country and around the globe basically to find out who was doing good things with eye care mm-hmm. and who needed or who could be recipients of bulk donations of reading glasses. Through the progression of us being a buy a pair, give a pair, or having a buy one, give one built into our model, we were always super concerned about the sustainability of that. Mm-hmm. Wanting to ensure that if Diff ever sold 1 million pairs of sunglasses a year, can we facilitate 1 million donations?
Right.
But not just in the sense of like, oh, we sent the glasses and we're done with it. Because mm-hmm. we don't do that. We're super hands-on. We love to track and know where not only our consumers' dollar is going, because that matters to them, but our impact. Mm-hmm. What is our impact really doing? And at what point would it be too much? Or do we reach a level of like really needing to reinvent this so that it is sustainable?
Right.
To this day, we work with a network of partners that allow us to be sustainable. We have done that very well. But we're always, again, hyper-concerned about what could happen and keeping our eyes on it and our hands. It's very high touch, I should say. And in doing so, we've also established and began to build other programs, other things that help us be a charitable brand and that empower and educate people, not just hand someone a resource.
Right.
So it's an evolution and it's a progression, like I said, and it's at the forefront of what we do. Mm-hmm. So I have someone in house full time that manages it. She's on a trip right now, or she just got back actually last night from Ecuador.
Amazing.
She was doing eye exams out there. And you'll see, I think in the next coming years, something that will happen with Diff is the evolution of what we do as a charitable brand.
I love that. Yeah. And tell us about what we have going on here. What are these? And then I know we have some bestsellers and some...
Yeah, my heart, my passion, you know, I talked about Zach being really about the marketing and wanting to do a lot with the influencers, and Chad Jernigan and my other partner really loved the website and building, you know, direct consumer models. And me, my passion just so happened to kind of fall on the charity. I met an individual, her name's Kelsey Sabo. She's the one that's in Ecuador, coming back from there right now. When I contacted her, she was through Instagram. I was trying to get her to receive reading glasses donations for her community where she was living as a Peace Corps volunteer.
Okay.
She was in Arua, Uganda. She told me no. She said, I actually can't receive freebies like that because it's not within my means to be giving resources out here. I'm a teacher. Mm. I really need to worry and focus about empowering these individuals to help themselves. Mm-hmm. So if you have any ideas about how we can do that, I'm all ears, but you know, donations and stuff like that, I just can't say yes to.
Right.
That conversation didn't stop there. I was taken back. What do you mean you can't, you know? And then I started to understand where she was coming from, and we had heard of other companies that were making products in other countries and having tailors create these products, and then those proceeds were doing good things for those communities. And that was the model that we kind of had in our mind. Mm-hmm. And then we landed on eyewear pouches. So sunglass pouches is what we started making. So Kelsey spent her time there as a Peace Corps volunteer, actually asked for another year. So she extended her term. And we built this program from scratch. So Diff Eyewear employees, now it's over 15 tailors in Nyeru, Uganda. They all hand make these pouches.
And they're really, really well made.
They're beautiful. And they're actually, everything's local. So all the fabric and everything that's in these pouches is sourced locally in local markets. All the tailors are from that local community. And actually, what really is incredible is Diff purchases these at a price that allows us to cover the wage and the production. So it covers the wage of the tailor and the production of the pouch. So nothing comes out of their pocket.
Wow.
The proceeds, the profit from these pouches stays in that community, and it actually goes towards a school.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Youth vaping is a serious problem. One issue, flavored vapor products that help adult smokers switch, but may also appeal to youth. To address it, Juul Labs stopped the sale of non-tobacco and non-menthol-based flavored Juul pods to over 90,000 traditional retail stores. Learn more about Juul Labs' efforts to combat youth vaping at juul.com/youth-prevention. Juul Labs. For adult smokers only. Paid for by Juul Labs.
You should...
Hi, I'm Chad Dime, co-founder of Diff Charitable Eyewear. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited to be here. So Diff, you know, started as an eyewear company. First, we started focusing on sunglasses. Mm-hmm. We pretty quickly realized that we were, due to the robust influencer program that we had built, we were working with a lot of powerful women, really, really, really influential women. So Diff sort of became more focused on women's eyewear for a while. We designed into a lot of frames that we thought would be really popular with women, and it worked. Diff, I mean, some of our best-selling frames right here is the Bella, the Becky 2. This is the Dash. These are all frames, women's frames, but they're also, you know, some of them could be unisex. But what we're also starting to do now is trying to learn how to speak to a men's audience as well. That's kind of, I think, the next evolution of Diff. But what you'll have in here is you have one style that is more men's, a unisex style, some of our ladies' frames. And this is a collaboration that we did right here. This is the Maxwell frame. This was Justin Baldoni's collaboration.
Well, amazing.
And another really interesting thing I love to tell about our frames is that every frame name comes from something personal. A lot of them are dogs.
Aww.
So the boys and I are dog lovers. We
love
all have
that.
Animals. And when we were trying to name these frames, we're like, well, where do we go? Like where do we pick a name? And we always have our dogs in the office. So we looked down and there was Riley.
Aww.
And we're like, that'll be a Riley.
That's
amazing.
And
my dog, Coda, and Cruz are like, okay, first three names are down. Now we actually take polls on Instagram for people to name our frames. And it's really cool.
That's so fun.
Give some character to them.
Amazing. Yeah. And entrepreneurship is often glamorized, right? Being your own boss and that whole thing. Kind of tell me the nitty-gritty truth about being your own boss and running a huge company or a growing company.
It's fun. I mean, glamorous, I don't know if I'd say it's glamorous. You think you can make it that way. I think people try to maybe talk it up more than it actually is or create a facade on Instagram or come to an interview and be on camera. And I don't know. It's not that glamorous to me. It's actually just a lot of hard work and it's fun. I think that is the honest truth. The other side of it that's definitely not glamorous that people don't talk about or maybe you don't hear is the stress that you go home with at night.
Right.
You know, I've always said that the security that you get from having a good job is beautiful. Being able to go to work and know that you're doing a good job and that you did your work and you go home. I'm sure great employees always, and I was one of them, you know, you go home thinking about your job. But as an owner, you go home thinking about different things.
Right.
You know, you go home thinking about the business and how you're going to open the doors tomorrow and keep the lights on. And then there's the people. If you're good owners and you run a good business, you're really concerned about the people. So I think that is kind of the most stressful, least glamorous, if you will. But diff, pretty humble. Like, we don't really get too caught up in, I'd say, the glamour. We try to just do our jobs and go home and be with our families. And
right.
Yeah, but it is a lot of hard work. Owning a business is crazy.
And do you think the company culture really is why your business is successful?
Part of why it's successful. The boys and I did what we could up until a certain point. Mm-hmm. You start to build a team. Mm-hmm. And when you start to build your team, you start to realize, okay, well, what made me and Chad and Zach really happy going to work in a small office with desks that we had bought used from someplace was fine for us.
Yeah.
When you start to bring these people in and these teammates in that you want to give something to so that they're motivated to be there and motivated to work hard, mm-hmm. that's where I think culture comes in.
Right.
Giving people a really fun, safe, happy place to come to work is paramount at this point because we're in a generation of people that won't stand for anything less, mm-hmm. kind of.
Right.
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be fun, but right. the other things, you know, have to be there. You have to be happy. It has to be a safe place to come to work. But we try to instill culture. I just mentioned we're in a new office. We built this beautiful new office with everything I could ever want. We have kombucha on tap and green tea and all these things for people to come in and have a good day.
Yeah.
And then we try to have Chipotle Fridays and these things that people come together on a Friday and hang out. Just right. hang out and be friends and, mm-hmm. and try to make the work life as enjoyable as possible. Super important.
That's amazing. And you use really premium materials. How do you keep the cost so low?
Manufacturing is our strong point. I'd say next to marketing, it's like the thing that we do best. Mm-hmm. When you've had family in the industry importing eyewear for as long as I have, it's over 40 years at this point. Like I said, we have relationships with factories that we've known for 20 plus years. Zach, he came to the table with factories that he'd been working with before Diff was ever started. Chad, the same thing. We somehow, as young people, had kind of gotten that part of it down first. Mm-hmm. So the way we keep our prices down is good relationships with the factories. We've never skimped. We've always put quality into what we do. And our glasses, you know, they reflect that. You know, you can find eyewear for much, much cheaper out there. Mm-hmm. But we are giving the fairest price point possible for the quality that we're creating, which is equal to that of what you see sold for $200, $300, $400 plus. If you grab a pair of those and you pick out any frame out of this vanity kit, you'll see that it's pretty much the exact same thing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And a lot of entrepreneurs are scared to start a business and they have that fear of failure. What tips or advice would you give those entrepreneurs?
Tips, I have a couple. First of all, you mentioned failure. You have to accept failure. Mm-hmm. You have to be open to failure. If you take those failures as lessons, like they say, this is pretty cliche at this point. You hear it in school, you hear it from family, I'm sure, but it's so true. You have to go through and try 10 different things to try to find your niche or to try to find what's going to work for you. I encourage you to fail, and I encourage you to use that as a starting point. Don't call it quits after that, unless the writing's on the wall, but use that as a starting point. It's just a fresh start.
Right.
I kind of talk about three key things that I think I would try to inspire, you know, any entrepreneur to really take on. Number one is commitment. If you are not committed to what you're doing and you're treating it like a side gig, I always hear people talk about side gigs and I'm going to try to go into this. I'm going to try to build that. You can't try to do anything in a half. You can't give it half of your energy. It's all or nothing. Mm-hmm. It really is, or else you can count on it being exactly what you're telling it it's going right. to be. Just half of what its potential could be.
Right.
So commitment in being there every day. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people start their own business because they think, oh, I'm going to make my own hours. Well, I'm sorry. You want to talk about the not glamorous part about all this? You're not making your own hours.
Right.
Your hours are from, they're 24. Mm-hmm. It's when you wake up to when you go to bed and then even in between.
Right.
So if you think that you're going to be making your own hours or doing your work from a boat in wherever island you like to be at, it's not working for me that way.
Right.
You know what I mean? So commitment. And the second thing I always tell people is integrity. So you should do things with honest and good intention. Mm-hmm. That way you never have to look over your shoulder.
Right.
The boys and I have never had to look over our shoulder doing business. We've always done business black and white. Mm-hmm. And it's better that way. Try to have integrity when you do business and be committed. And then the third thing is give back. If I had to give people advice on starting a business now, it's please try to integrate some sort of give back. Mm-hmm. It's really easy when you really think about it. Not easy in a sense, if you say you're going to do something, you have to do that. Mm-hmm. If I commit to making a one-for-one or that I'm going to sell a pair of sunglasses and give a pair of reading glasses to someone I need, you have to do that.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be that big of a project for you. If you want to inspire others just by saying, hey, in my business, I'm going to do this much to give back, that's all I'm asking for. Mm-hmm. Because it's a snowball effect or whatever you call it. It's a domino effect. It's like people will follow.
This is Business Rockstars. That was my amazing guest, Chad Dime, co-founder of Diff Charitable Eyewear.
Oh my gut. We need to talk about something. Constipation, abdominal pain, and bloating. You tell yourself, it's not that bad. You take laxatives and modify your diet and exercise routine. But thinking about it all the time is frustrating. This doesn't have to define you. If your constipation comes back again and again and you don't know why, then it may be time to seek help. Go to ohmygut.info where you can learn more about your symptoms and get to know your gut. That's ohmygut.info. ohmygut.info.
Jim Pee-wee Martin was in the Battle of the Bulge and describes the terrible conditions he and his few paratroopers faced.
You know, when you're really cold, you shiver to keep warm. We had so little food, not enough energy, and we quit shivering. That means you're really in bad shape. The doctors couldn't understand how we survived.
The American Veterans Center protects the legacy and honors the sacrifice of America's veterans. But it's up to you to keep their story alive. To hear the rest of Pee-wee's story, go to AmericanVeteransCenter.org. That's AmericanVeteransCenter.org.
Andro 400 Max, man, that's a game changer. You know, I don't eat as much as I used to, and I don't miss it, and I don't feel deprived.
Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. Our guest today is Inan Ravid. He's the founder and CEO of Albert. Inan, it's good to have you, brother.
Nice to be here.
All right, give us the elevator pitch. What is Albert? What do you guys do?
All right, so Albert gives simple financial advice and lets you take action right from the app. So when we think about our target customer, mid-20s, second job out of college, I've heard it all before. Save money, pay off your credit card, get renter's insurance.
And yet they have the most debt out of any generation.
And none of us do any of this stuff. And yeah. The question is why? And there are many answers, but to us, one of the most fundamental answers is that it's very difficult to take action. Mm-hmm. So not only is it difficult to get advice, but even if you've gotten advice, save money. We know. I know I should save money. And why?
But we also know we should eat healthy, but obesity is an epidemic, right?
Right, exactly. Because it's very easy to eat unhealthy food. It's right in front of us. It's very easy to spend money on our credit card. It's very difficult to, let's say, get a loan to repay that credit card with much lower interest. It's very difficult to actually get renter's insurance. If you're getting renter's insurance, for example, you're going on the web, you're Googling, you're then filling out these really lousy old school web forms and you're doing this four times in a row and it's boring. So you move on. And so we built Albert to connect to all of your accounts, give you two or three practical financial recommendations to improve your financial health today and not some vague concept 40 years down the road, but really to improve it today. Okay. And we've built relationships with banks, with lenders and insurers so you can actually take action directly from the app. And that to us is really the magic sauce. That's the key. Can we let people who struggle with taking the action do it very easily? We sort of call it putting the easy button on things you know you need to do.
I love that. And so just even hearing what you just said, especially creating those relationships with the banks and lenders and things like that, that's not easy to do. So my guess is you guys probably had to raise money at some point and get some strategic partners. Is that the case?
That's exactly right. So we raised a seed round from awesome institutional investors. Mm-hmm. Part of those investors are institutionally or have institutional relationships. And through that, we've been able to build a lot of the relationships with banks, with lenders and insurance.
Do you think they bet on the jockey or the horse? You know, that's the old saying, right? It's like some investors bet on the jockey being you and some people bet on the horse being the app, Albert. But my question is, was it a combination of the two?
What was it? At this stage, for most investors, it's... I don't know if I'm the jockey, but let's call it the team. Call the team the jockey.
The team's the jockey.
They bet on the team, right? Okay. The app is new, you know, It's been in the store, in the app store for 2 months.
And everyone's coming out with apps these days.
Exactly.
So it's really about the team who can execute.
Right. And at the end of the day, the app is a very small, it's what people touch when they see Albert Table. It's a very small part of the vision in the company, right? It is what you materially touch. But at the end of the day, right, it's a service. Albert provides a service. You know, we have text message-based support, right? That's a lot of what we do. We provide content, we provide explanations, and we build these relationships. And the app is really just a hunk of technology that lets people interact with what we've built.
Well, what's the hardest part about raising money? It's such a big trend. We've got Crowdfunder, we've got Kickstarter, we've got Shark Tank, we've got all of these different things. We even have restaurant shows on TV now where people come in just to raise money for their restaurants. Almost everything nowadays in the entrepreneur space, I'd probably say top three things that are trending is raising money for your business, especially in the app space where you're at. So what do you think was the key to you guys successfully raising money? And what do you think are some of the mistakes that you see people make that are trying to raise money for their app that don't end up getting funded?
I think that I think the biggest mistake, I'm not sure it's a mistake, but I think the biggest struggle people have is wanting to raise money because that's what you're supposed to do. So the way we raised money this time is we actually hunkered down for about 9 months and built an app and built a service and built relationships and did that really without raising money. I mean, we were actually part of an accelerator in San Francisco, and that helped us out a lot. And they really, really helped us hone in on the product. But it was really, when we raise money, it's because people wanted to give us money. It's not because we went out and tried to find, you know, 20 investors. And from my experience, if you're going out and if nobody's finding you, it's really, really difficult to raise money, because you then have to convince somebody to write you a check where they didn't have this idea implanted in their head beforehand.
So you're essentially in a position of having to convince and pitch versus having that person come and find you.
Yeah. And you still have to convince and pitch that person.
Of course.
But at the very least, they're starting at a place where they're fundamentally interested in what
you're
doing.
Like a warm lead versus a cold lead or
an investor. Exactly. It's a little more than a warm lead, right? It's somebody interested in what you're doing fundamentally. And that can be because of who you are, your past experience, the design of the product, where, you know,
they read an article online or anything.
Yeah, the secular trends in your industry, a whole variety of things. But at the very least, they've come in and are interested. And that can happen via introductions from a friend, or they just heard about you, or you advertised and they heard about it. But I think the warm lead, having the investor fundamentally interested in what you're doing beforehand, changes the dynamic.
Was that the case with you guys?
It was. You know, we have we all have investors that are fundamentally interested in personal financial management. Let's start there. So
How big of an industry is this, by the way? Because, you know, if these guys invested a good amount of money in your business, they obviously see potential massive return, meaning this industry, this opportunity that Albert is creating and capitalizing on should be a pretty big space.
Without a doubt, I think the numbers, if you look at census data, there are about 100 million people born between 1981 and 2000, millennials, so to speak. And I fall in that bracket, and I think we all struggle with roughly the same thing. I mean, of those 100 million, there are probably 99.5 million that struggled with the three things that I mentioned at the beginning, you know, saving money, credit card debt, renter's insurance. Who doesn't struggle with that?
I mean, the average college graduate, just to throw some stats in here, because I speak all over the country to different colleges, the average college graduate graduates with $25,000 to $34,000 in school debt.
School debt alone. They haven't even rented an apartment yet.
They haven't even really got
They haven't gotten a job yet, right? Exactly. Yeah. And so that market's big. There are two things really to think about. One is a big market is great because you can build something that can touch tens of millions of lives. The same thing, it's also an exercise in discipline to maintain focus when the market is so big, right? Because if you go out and say, I'm going to serve 1/3 of America, that's a very, very big operation. So you have to think of, okay, within that community, who are we really going to serve, and come up with archetypes and really feel, not just statistical architects, but really feel who that user is. And that really for us has been how we narrow that market.
I love that, because so many young adults these days are struggling financially, which is why it's an honor to have the founder and CEO of Albert, Inan Ravid, joining us right now. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Inan Ravid's the founder and CEO of Albert, an app that helps young adults who are struggling with financial debt overcome that and be able to pay it off with simple action steps. What do you think is the hardest part about getting people to actually use this? Because nowadays, millennials are so inundated with apps and technology, and we're literally in an information overload era in our life right now. And so how do they actually know to use your app? Has it been easy? What have been some of the tough parts about getting people to actually download
it?
The app?
Yeah, you mentioned financial debt. It's not really just about financial debt. It actually gets to the point of how we get people to pay attention to the app in many ways.
Because they're in a lot of pain, so they're
willing to... Yeah, so there's pain, there's frustration, there's boredom. Yeah. There's all the things that are not conducive to fixing financial problems.
Or living a great life.
Well, you know,
if you're focused on struggling with money, that's going to hinder you.
Right. Or you live a great life for a short period of time and look up in 2 years and realize that you have more money problems.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So for us, actually, it's been about keeping the message lighthearted, right? We get it. We're all in this, right?
Yeah.
We all have experienced the cycle of the paycheck where you get paid, you buy too many, you know, drinks at the bar, take too many people out to the restaurant, and then you look at the end of the month and you, you're buying instant noodles at the grocery store. And we've all been there. And to us, the message is, okay, we got that. Let's not take it. It's a serious matter that we need to solve, but let's not look at the very traditional serious metrics of what does the chart show on the way to retirement? If you save X amount every day and it compounds 7%, that sort of stuff we think is very alienating.
So what are you guys doing to make it fun and hip? Because you guys are targeting the young people. So
you're on the day-to-day
problems. You're bashing
problems.
The old school stuff.
Right, so we focus on the day-to-day problems. We know that cycle. You get paid and so let's help save.
Give me a practical
So for example.
I download the app.
You turn on Albert's Savings. It's one of the key pieces of the app. And Albert's Savings starts to save money for you in an FDIC-insured bank account that lives, or savings product, not
so
bank
account. So is it pulling my money out, or I have
it's
to actually
pulling
do
your
it?
Money out of your whatever bank you have into Albert's Savings, which is an FDIC-insured a pool of money that lives on Albert, and you...
So I see. I already see the model over here for how you guys make money then.
Well, so actually, you know, it's a funny thing you mentioned. Savings is not a phenomenal business model at the get-go for us. You know, we
of
hold
course.
The deposits, but interest rates are so low in the country, they really don't make much money. We give the interest back to the customer.
Do you guys not allocate funding like a typical bank would?
No.
For investments and bonds and...
No. So it's a savings account. So we store the deposits. We pay the customer some bonuses. We're not a bank, so we don't pay interest, but we pay bonuses that reward you for holding your money for a certain amount of time.
So how do you guys profit then? I know we kind of are deviating, but my interest is like extremely peaked on the business model side of it.
So what we've done and what we think is innovative is we give away financial planning at the end of the day is what we're doing entirely for free to a new customer.
Through the form of an app and a unique.
Form of an app.
Which
in
is awesome.
In the old days, right, you sat across the table from a financial planner and for 45 minutes heard that you need to get a whole lot of things like annuities and things, term life insurance that you don't need.
But I'm not talking to them every day. The app helps me with that.
Exactly. So now we focus not on those old school things. We focus on the newer things. We focus on, let's say, renter's insurance, things you actually need today. Mm. And via the relationships we've built with financial institutions like banks, lenders, insurers, we get paid by the institutions when customers take action to improve their financial health.
Okay.
So we give the financial planning for free and we get paid by the banks.
Okay.
And that lets us build this in a way that doesn't charge the customer. So we think the revolutionary bit is taking a conversation that used to be 45 minutes across the table about old school things. And at the end of the day, you got some printout prescription that you had to do by yourself effectively to a new model where you're not paying for the advice. You're getting practical recommendations.
So and the whole app's for free.
The whole app's for free.
All of this is for free.
Exactly.
So go to the App Store, download Albert, and on. Pleasure having you, brother.
Nice to meet you.
Love what you're up to.
Nice to see you.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Does your negative thinking slow you and your business down? Shift your negative mindset to positive thinking with these three tips. I'm Alex Worley with a Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, don't complain. Complaining will never get you anywhere. It's literally a huge waste of time. And the longer you complain about something, the longer it will take you to find a solution to fix the issue. Number two, embrace change. Change is a common occurrence as an entrepreneur. A change in company direction after a pivot, a change in location, or even a change in industry. When you push that fear aside and embrace change, it opens the door to happiness. Number three, seeking everyone's approval. We naturally want to make everyone happy, especially when it comes to friends and family, but unless they are in the trenches with you and share the same vision, their input can only stress you out, leading you to make poor business decisions. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com. Code 0707. Enjoy!
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Jeff Olson. If you use a proton pump inhibitor medication to treat your heartburn, you might be concerned about studies warning of side effects, including the risk for kidney damage.
I think the risk of a patient on a proton pump inhibitor developing kidney failure is very, very rare, maybe less than 1 out of 1,000. But it's still worth talking to your physician.
Dr. Ken DeVault says people using a proton pump inhibitor should ask two important questions. First, have I been diagnosed with a serious esophageal disease?
If in the past you've been told you have esophagitis, which is irritation of the lining, or Barrett's esophagus, you might do yourself harm by stopping it.
Question two, if I stop taking a proton pump inhibitor, can I find a different way to control my heartburn?
A certain proportion of folks can control it just with diet and lifestyle maneuvers.
Avoiding heartburn triggers like smoking, caffeine, fatty foods, and chocolate may help you beat the burn. Also, don't eat too much too fast and avoid meals right before bedtime. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org.
I'm Laurel Mintz, Senior Business Rockstars Correspondent and CEO of Elevate My Brand. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs worldwide daily on radio, TV, and online. I'm here with Jennifer Burson of Generation PR and Generation Academy. Jen, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So everyone wants to be in PR. How did you get into this world?
Oh, I have kind of a non-traditional career path. So I actually started out in civil litigation. You and I have that in common.
Yeah.
I'm an attorney also, and I practiced for about 4 years, and it just felt more like a job to me than a career. I know you kind of probably understand that mm-hmm. distinction. And I just felt like there was a more kind of creative path and a path where I could be my own boss. And I started working for a brand on the side, unpaid, promoting
while
a
you were attorney?
Company while I was an attorney.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was kind of doing double duty. And I just loved the work so much, even though I wasn't making any money doing it. I was kind of promoting a brand unpaid on the side. And I said, if I can do this full time, this would just be the perfect fit for me personality wise. And I would be excited to go to work every day. And so I started to explore options for how I could make a career out of this. Do I go work for an agency? What does that look like? What resources are available to a person that wants to run a business like this? And I just decided I'm going to start my own company.
How did that brand find you, or did you find the brand?
I found the brand, actually. So it was a fragrance company, and I found them on my bar trip. So after you take the bar, you know, you go to like Europe or Asia.
Yes, I did Greece.
Greece, yep. Okay. Yep. I went to Italy and all over Europe. Very lucky to get to do that. Mm-hmm. You kind of go crazy before you start practicing. And while I was there, I discovered a little fragrance company. And when I ran out of it, I searched everywhere to find this company and finally realized that they were based in California, which is where I am. And I loved it so much. And I said, why doesn't this brand have any presence here? Nobody knew about it. The marketing concept of the brand was so beautiful and it merchandised really well. And I just had all these ideas for how I could help this brand get increased sales. And it just came to me with this one particular company. I just had such a connection to it. So I reached out to the owner. I wrote her this, you know, passionate plea, please let me support you in some way. I won't ask for any money, but I will need product. You know, I thought she's going to think I'm a crazy person that just wants some free stuff. Mm-hmm. But she said, I think that'd be a great idea. Let's give it a try. and sent me this huge box of lotions and perfume, and it was like—
And you were happy, happy girl.
Loved it,
so
it was great.
So you fell into being an entrepreneur, or did you kind of have that inside you the whole time?
I think that I had it inside me the whole time. So my dad has his own business, and I just grew up in a household where my parents were always available to me, you know, whether we were doing sports or going to art classes or having family dinners together. And when I was an attorney, I didn't see a lot of my peers or a lot of my role models having a similar family life that I ultimately wanted to have. And so just looking at my father as a model, I knew that I wanted some way where I could be present for my children. And at the time, I didn't have kids. I wasn't even married. But I saw the path and knew that I wanted to create an environment for myself where I could have the kind of balance. I know that word's a little controversial and tricky because you never have perfect balance, but as close to the family and work life setup that I was hoping to achieve.
Connecting a community of entrepreneurs worldwide on the radio, TV, and online. I'm Laurel Mintz, and this is Business Rockstars. I'm here with Jennifer Bursen with Generation PR and Generation Academy. Let's talk a little bit about the leap from creating the PR agency and the academy. It's really cool what you're doing. You're productizing basically what you have learned over the years of being in PR, which is so invaluable. Where was that journey? How was that leap made?
Well, I've been running my agency for 11 years, and it's great. It's going, you know, very strong, stronger than ever, I would say, and which is really exciting. And I get asked a lot of the same questions all the time from entrepreneurs. And, you know, at some point, there's just the balance of time spent to be with my family and time spent that's dedicated to my clients. And I love talking with entrepreneurs, but I wanted to find a way where I could talk to more people and support more people. But, you know, one-off conversations, they take a lot of time. And
absolutely,
I was finding that I couldn't have all these, you know, conversations with a lot of people. So I actually started a Facebook group and put it out there just to connect with people, and didn't expect it would take off the way that it did, but it's grown tremendously. And there's entrepreneurs from all over the world. And what's been really exciting is that they're all supporting each other. And it's this really strong community, but I'm learning what entrepreneurs need. So it's all stages of their business and the support at the beginning and how to create a marketing plan and how to implement a PR strategy, how to connect with social influencers,
so important,
how to integrate social media marketing. And so we're providing free live training and just giving as much value as we can to this community. And then I started to realize, you know, I have a lot of expertise and experience to offer. And so the way that I could potentially put it out into the world is to create courses where I can teach people the exact strategies and steps that they need to implement.
And it's so much more scalable. I mean,
yes,
it's good for you because it means that you can teach that to more people.
Yeah.
And it's so necessary. I love what you said about giving, right? You're giving this to your community. You're offering them tips and tools that otherwise they would not have access to. And you're doing what your kind of big picture vision is. I think you're kind of like a unicorn.
Well, we'll see.
Most publicists like hold that information back. They don't want to share that information. Why is that?
I never worked at a PR agency. I just kind of did my own thing.
Maybe
and
that's
I feel
the difference.
Like, yeah, and I feel like people have helped me along the way, and I've had mentors, and I've had people come to me and ask for advice and strategies, and I'm happy to share. I just feel like there's enough work to go around. And I feel like when you create a community of supportive people around you, it only helps you and elevates your own brand.
Thank you for the name drop. I appreciate
that.
Tying
it all back in there.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I like to have a collaborative community, and the more you give, the more that comes back to you.
I totally agree with that. It's a complete cycle. I really think it's so smart that you recognize, you know what, I can only give so much being an agency, right? I mean, you had a team and you were working with some really, really big brands. Actually, can you share with us some of those brands? Or are you not allowed to share that on the air?
No, I think I can. So we work with a lot of baby and kids brands. So mm-hmm. I actually started, my first client was a company called Little Giraffe. A very upscale, luxurious baby blanket and mm-hmm. accessories manufacturer.
Pretty much everyone has one of those
now.
And
had a lot of success with some celebrity seating and celebrities using the products and a lot of press. So kind of developed an expertise for my company there. And so we represent Skip Hop, which is a huge international brand. Really excited to be working with that brand and just brands all over the world. I have a Canadian company, Lulu Joe Baby.
You are just all over the place. I love it.
Beauty brands
as
well. That's my passion.
So great. Lifestyle and beauty. Connecting a community of entrepreneurs worldwide on radio, TV, and online. I'm Laurel Mintz, and this is Business Rockstars.